Hello and welcome to the Bingeables podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin
and Isaac,
and I'm Nerd Bomber,
and I'm Tectic.
We are here to talk about The Good Place. Oh. And this is, you know, our spoiler episode.
So be warned.
Oh, that's,
those are alarms, if you were wondering.
That's something I've never done, is given that line sound effects. Good job.
So, The Good Place has been talked about so much, and the show just ended recently. And while I was rewatching the show, I was having such a hard time trying to figure out, how are we going to break up this discussion? We could go like a philosophical. We could go that route. We could talk about character development. There's just so much. There's so many ways to tackle this. And Nerd Bomber helped me figure it out while we were DMing each other, that we could just break it down by season and talk about our favorite seasons. And Isaac and I agreed that's a great way to go about it, because every season is pretty distinct.
Yeah, I feel like each season had its own unique story arc, and that was one of the nice things about this show, too. Like, nothing ever felt like you were in a rut, because every season kind of brought a new adventure and storyline with it, so it didn't feel like the same old every year. You got something kind of new to look forward to.
Okay, let's talk about order of watching real quick, because I saw this actually a little out of order. I saw season two before I saw season one, so I already knew the game was up. How stunned were you at the end of season one?
So season one was probably my favorite season because of that twist. The fact that you spent the entire first season thinking that they really were in the good place and thinking that Eleanor and Jason were out of place. And then just at the very end to get that shock that this was the bad place the entire time, and this was all a ruse by Michael, and he was just manipulating them, was probably the biggest twist in a TV show that I can remember in, like, the last decade. I mean, it was just one of those things where I think I sat on the couch and I looked at Tectic, and my mind was just blown, and my jaw dropped, and I was like, I did not expect that whatsoever. So definitely, like, an A-plus twist, and for me, I think that was, for me, why season one was one of my favorite seasons, because not only did you get the great setup of the show, and you got to watch how the characters met each other and developed relationships with each other, but that ending was just so satisfying, because it was just something completely out of the blue that I did not expect.
And they did it well, too, simply because every single one of them that was in the, quote, good place was not really that bad of a person. I mean, it wasn't like any mass serial killers or anything like that. It was run-of-the-mill average people that happened to be there. So why would you have any reason to challenge that they were not in the good place?
And it's surprising, too, because, like, Chidi was a moral philosophy professor, and from everything that you see of him, he seems like a genuinely good person. And even, like, Tahani, she doesn't seem like a bad person at all. But when you start delving into the philosophical aspects behind why they wouldn't be in the good place, whereas if it's Chidi's indecision and his inability to make any decisions that have a negative impact in everybody's life just because he's just stuck all the time, or Tahani just not having the correct motivations behind anything that she does. That's just so, it was like a mind-blowing thing, because even when you think about, like, good people versus bad people, you don't necessarily consider stuff like that, like the motivations or the ripple effect. It was just a very intriguing way to look at the show. And like you said, you didn't expect these people to necessarily be bad people, pretty much just like Eleanor and Jason you thought were out of place.
Okay, so I want to ask, because I did eventually watch season one, so did alarm bells, or what did you think of Tahani's constant name dropping in season one? Like, how did you think about her character? Or did that even register to you? That's a good question.
So for me, that did not register for me, simply because I'm more of a black and white good place, bad place. Like, you can be kind of a snob, but that's not a reason to go in the bad place. You have to be like a really bad person to go in the bad place. So I thought she was just kind of snobby, but all in all, she helped people. So that net help people versus snob got her in the good place.
Yeah, especially when they keep saying that like she raised billions of dollars for charity. Like I was just like, oh, okay, so she's kind of not fun to interact with, but she's done all of these good things, so that's why she's here.
Yeah, I agree with that too. In terms of her snobbiness, I didn't like the name dropping. I didn't think about it too much. I just thought, okay, this girl has a flaw, don't we all?
Okay, because I mean, because I have the benefit of knowing the future, right? As I'm watching it, I'm like, man, like I know I wouldn't have guessed that they were in the bad place, but I certainly like would have thought that Tahani wouldn't have necessarily fit because of like the way that she treated Eleanor. I'm like, no, this like she doesn't see something else is off besides just Eleanor.
I mean, to even to this moment, when I was going through that, the only one that I really saw as absolutely righteous was Chidi. And even now, I still think his logic for being cast to the bad place early on didn't really make sense to me. So I can kind of see where you're coming from, where, you know, Jason definitely had flaws, right? He stole, cheated, you name it.
Right.
And Eleanor, well, we don't need to dive into that. She, same kind of thing, didn't really care about anyone else. But Tahani, I'd say was borderline on that one. And then Chidi, I still, again, he should have been good place, no thought about it.
Well,
being not indecisive is not a terrible
so
thing.
So actually, that's why I like why in the spoiler-free episode, I brought up the storytelling or the how this plot goes, because it makes sense in the arc of the show why Chidi is there. Chidi ended up causing so much other misery in the world because of his indecisiveness, and the point system the way that it was is what put him there, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, I agree with you. Like, he didn't necessarily do anything wrong. In fact, he was trying to live a good life, but he just didn't because of his crippling indecision. But speaking of his crippling indecision, in watching season one, I felt like that was probably a dead giveaway that something else was wrong in this good place, because it seemed like Michael knew about his indecision and would then just go, okay, now choose between a dry erase marker and a pencil. I just need you to make a decision. What did you guys think of that scene? Like, how did you react to it?
See, I think that's one of the interesting things. Like, the first watch through, I did not think anything of that. I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, which utensil does he want to use to write? But if you go back on that rewatch, like, you had already had the benefit of the doubt of knowing that that it was the bad place. But, like, with fresh eyes, you had no idea. So all of those little things didn't really add up. And it's kind of the genius aspect of the show, because all of the clues and evidence are laid out in front of you. It's just, can you put it together?
Right, right. And so I will say that when Chinlin described the plot to me, my thought was not that they were in the bad place. When she was like, oh yeah, there's this girl and she's bad, and there's this monk that won't talk but does talk, and he's also a terrible person, and they're supposed to be in the good place. And I was like, oh, well, clearly there's someone smuggling in not so nice people into the good place for some reason, and that's going to be the plot. But that's not the plot at all. So it's not like I would have guessed either. I'm just curious because like I didn't have that experience, and so I want to know, you know, what it was like to watch it without knowing that they were in the bad place.
All in all, I recommend watching it forward instead of jumping.
Yeah, I would too, I would say.
Nerd Bomber, I have one more question about the season one finale. Cliffhanger. When Michael resets everything, what were your thoughts at the time about season two?
I was kind of concerned that season two would be a rehash of season one.
Oh my God,
and
me
I was
too.
A little bit disappointed. I was like, oh, I literally just lived through this and I don't need to see it again. Like, this feels like now they're just going to do the same thing over and over again. And the whole thing that I liked about the show was how unique and fresh. So I was kind of concerned that going into season two, we would kind of lose that aspect because then they're just doing the same thing over. And luckily, I was wrong.
Right. They head faked us. Go ahead, Tectic.
I think the biggest thing that salvaged season two from that hole, I guess we'll call it, is the fact that every reboot made Janet sassier. And that was amazing for me.
Oh, yeah, because she acquired more human characteristics with every reboot.
Yeah, and in turn, becoming the snarky, sassy Janet that we know and love.
Are we done with season one?
Well, I was segueing into season two.
Okay.
Because
I wanted to make sure.
I felt the same way with the season one finale. Okay, are they just going to have a repeat of season two? Is this one of those shows where they were going for a more ambiguous ending so that they can, once they know they renew for season two, then they can figure out what season two is going to be about? So I was also concerned about season two being redundant as season one. And then when I started season two, I was like, huh, okay, they're not doing that thing I thought they were gonna do. They're actually gonna move forward and do something different with it. Cause we reached a turning point fairly early on with Michael, when Vicky starts back blackmailing him.
Right. I would say that the reason I like season two so much, and it's my favorite, is because of the episode where they go through like all the different, you know, iterations that they're all the different reboots. And in fact, in the podcast for the show, they mentioned that was sort of like the epitome of the show was that episode. And I was like, yeah, I agree. That's the episode that really drew me in, that made me think, yeah, this is really good. And then, so they go through, you know, obviously dozens, hundreds of these permutations. And then, like you said, Vicky starts to blackmail Michael, and Michael then has this turning point where he's like, all right, well, I can't win here, so I guess I'll team up with the humans. And I thought that was a good direction for the show.
I liked his character development in that season, which is why season two is also my favorite. Because I guess you have your four humans, and then you have the guy who you thought was good, but was actually, a demon. And then you have Janet. And Janet also undergoes a character development as well, with all the reboots that she went through. So with Michael, I was like, okay, is he going to be the same? Or is he also going to learn something and improve upon himself? So I was really glad that was the direction that the showrunner and the writers went with. And my favorite episode of season two is actually the trolley problem, where Chidi is trying to teach him about this this moral lesson, and Michael's like, oh, well, I'm trying to connect with it, but like I can't with these books. Like, I gotta live it in real time. And then just snaps his fingers and they're all of a sudden in a trolley about to hit either four people or one person.
Not only was that a great kind of lesson and hilarious moment, but later on in the show, it even circles back to. So it's one of those moments that they really make stick with you and bring back to it later on to really, really tug at your heartstrings.
And I mean, even that is so brilliant because the entire thing, if it's trying to make you think about philosophy, that illustrates how different people learn things. And some people are okay with being able to read from a book and learn. But for example, Michael, who just couldn't connect on that level, like, obviously he was a demon and stuff, so that played into it a little bit too. But the fact that like he had to learn through experience, there's so many things that this show addresses, and they're so little and not in your face. And it's just, it goes to show how brilliant this show is, because from, if you're like a teacher watching this show, maybe that like put a light bulb on, like, oh, maybe I need to illustrate, if I'm trying to teach someone moral philosophy, maybe I need to illustrate this in a different way.
Now, I should note that Michael really wasn't saying that he needed to interact with the material. I mean, that's what he told them.
Right.
But he was just tormenting them because he was falling into his old habits.
Right. It was still a very impactful scene. I thought that was actually super funny. Like, it was kind of gruesome, and obviously it put Chidi and Eleanor in like a really weird situation. But I thought that was a really funny moment in the show.
And while, yes, I'm going to circle back to what I said. While, yes, it was Michael falling back into his habits, it was done to further show growth of Michael later on.
Right.
Yep.
I agree.
Yep. In your face. Sorry.
Right.
I was...
Exactly. In your face.
Okay. I'm done. Did you guys have anything else about season two?
I'm going to skip ahead real quick and just touch on how that comes back later on. And so later on, I believe it's the end of season three. They all are jumping in to try to save themselves from eternal damnation. And there's one, everyone has a key except they're one key short to get Eleanor in. And Michael has the key also. And instead of going in and leaving Eleanor behind, he gives Eleanor his key and sacrifices himself for the greater good. Thus, circling back to the trolley problem. The answer to the trolley problem is not to hit the one friend or to hit the group of people, but rather to blow up the trolley.
Right, to sacrifice yourself. And I'm pretty sure that was the end of season three, but yeah, I agree with you. That's he did show some growth there. Like, he figured out, oh, the real way to, you know, solve this problem is to try not to kill anyone unless it's yourself, because you can take responsibility for your own life, and this way you're not, you know, choosing who anyone else that you don't have control over. You're not choosing life for them. You're essentially, you know, saving their lives. Or
the one plot hole in that reference is when they circled back to the surgeon one. If a doctor just kills himself, then that doesn't do anything.
Right. Yeah, but see, that one was you had to kill an innocent person to save five people.
So that one didn't make sense to me.
So the reason why the trolley problem kind of works is because you get this sense that it's inevitable. One of these two groups of people is going to die, either the one person or the five. And every time I hear this question, I'm like, why can't you just yell at everyone to get off the tracks? Like, what is preventing you from just warning people? I don't understand. And does this trolley not have brakes? Yeah, it doesn't matter. But the problem with the surgeon and the patients is that
there is no third option.
And one person isn't just going to die anyway, right? It's not like you're choosing between one and five. Like, one person is going to die no matter what. Or so someone has to die. It's that you would be actively choosing, I have to kill this person to save these five people.
Oh, wait. No, you can apply it the same way as the trolley. The doctor can kill himself and donate the organs. That's how you save everybody.
Yeah, I suppose.
No, that is one way to go about it.
All right, it still applies to Michael. Way to go, Michael.
Good job. Way to be less of a demon and more of a human.
I did like that line in the trolley episode where he was like, he drew out that whole thing to say, okay, so I think this is how we can get all six of them.
One of the things that I really liked about season two was the kind of knowing and not knowing that was going on, where the humans knew that they were in the bad place. They had figured it out again. But Michael has told them, look, you have to team up with me. And They're like, well, why should we trust you? And he's like, you have to. I mean, I wouldn't, especially if I were in your place, but you're going to have to. And so throughout that, especially the middle part of the season, there's a lot of kind of waffling back and forth, at least for me. Like, is he tricking them, or is he being genuine? And it's really not until the scene, well, not, it's a scene later where he's giving them all clues as to how to avoid capture by the Bad Place people, that you really find out that he is, in fact, really working for them and not just putting on an act.
Honestly, Michael is probably one of the most interesting characters in terms of development in this entire show. Because, I mean, even when you look at what he was trying to do in season one by setting up the neighborhood, all signs kind of pointed to the fact that he wanted to be more human somehow, whether he realized it or not. Like, he thought he wanted to just torture them in a different way, but really what he was setting himself up for was being able to immerse himself in the human world, even if it wasn't real. And so watching his development and watching how he does, in fact, achieve that humanity as time goes on and just kind of tamps down his original nature, because he is a demon and that's what he was designed to do, is super interesting and really great character development. And I think Ted Danson portraying these developments, even in the nuances and some of his facial expressions, was just incredible.
And I think that's a very good point, Nerd Bomber. Like, it does seem like he had his kind of drive, whether he knew it or not, was to be more human. And I absolutely think you're right on that.
All right. Do we want to move on to season three?
Yes.
Sure.
What I like to call the worst season.
Why? Because they went back to Earth?
So for those of you who don't know, we had all went through and picked our favorite season. Nerd Bomber was season one. Chin Lin and Isaac was season two. And I was season four. And thus, since no one picked season three, that means it was the least favorite. It had to have been.
Wasn't a bad season. It was just, I think in terms of like the compelling storylines, I feel like one, two, and four were better ones. But it wasn't bad.
Your logic is flawless. And obviously it is the worst season. But I also agree, it's not a bad season. It's just...
No, I...
In fact, I missed some of these episodes. And I just caught them on the rewatch. This is the season where they figured out what the problem was with the afterlife and the point system.
The current point system.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I had missed that and had watched most of season four and going, I guess they just, you know, something happened with that test that they were doing and now we're doing this. Okay.
So why I want to classify it as that, and keep in mind, this ranking is one through four, so one has to fall at last place. Why I want to classify it as that, because it seemed like it was a season used to build the fourth season, to set the stage, if I may. There was a lot of kind of plots that just dragged out, and nothing really happened up until you've kind of hit the end of the season or reached season four. But it was a good season because it was a necessary season in order to have successful for season four. So that said, I will hand it over to Chin Lin to explain exactly what happened in season three.
So season three, they put on this experiment where the humans go back to just before they died and they actually survive. So Michael helps save them all and then they get to live their lives. So for Eleanor, they all had a near-death
experience. I was like, yeah, now that I think about it, three of the four only needed a push. Like, he just did a lot of pushing, with the exception of Jason, where he unlocked the safe or opened the safe. But everyone else, he like forced out of the way in some way, shape, or form. Like, he pushed Tahani out of the way of the statue. He pushed Eleanor out of the way of the grocery carts. And he essentially almost ran Chidi over with his bike and kept him from getting crushed by the air conditioner.
Which I did love how in each situation he had like a different persona. Like, I believe he had a mullet when he saved Tahani.
Oh, yeah.
He was either a mullet or a ponytail.
Oh, a ponytail. And it was,
I didn't it was even fantastic. Notice that. That's awesome.
It was absolutely, like, because he was a bouncer. He was disguised as a bouncer. And when he tackled her out of the way, his hair was done up, and it was fantastic. And then he had, to save Chidi, he was in full-up biker gear on the sidewalk, which, props to being on the sidewalk. I can't stand when bikers are on the road.
I think the road is where they're supposed to be. This
I,
is like
I know
a weird
it is,
tangent.
But, like, this is, like, something that I'm just, they're always in the way. Anyway, So, and plus, if you're on the sidewalk, you could very well save someone's life. Case in point, Chidi Adegonye.
There you go.
So he had the full up get up, that which made that one great. And then Jason and Eleanor, it was his normal self. But I don't know that he could have or needed to disguise himself kind of well enough in that situation, simply because Jason was in a safe and wouldn't have seen him anyway.
Right. And Eleanor is so self-centered that she would never notice who it was.
Yeah, she was focused on her jug of margarita mix.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the girl loves her margaritas.
Who doesn't? As long as I'm still able to go to the good place, I will continue to procure margarita jugs.
That's actually one of the things that I liked about season three was, so they all have this near-death experience, and they all kind of start to be good for a little bit, and I'm thinking more of Eleanor here, but then, like, doing the right thing ends up seeming like a real punishment here on Earth because of other selfish people, right? And so she kind of falls back into, like, well, why should I be good? Like, I'm not getting anything out of it. Like, and so, you know, the incentive is kind of gone. And of course, you know, that was actually the whole experiment, right? Like, the judge was like, you should do good things to be good. But, you know, it's really difficult because there are just, if you're so nice, it makes it easy for everyone else to make your life miserable.
I think that was probably one of the best things to come out of season three for me, because I feel like that's a real life thing. Like, sometimes you'll try so hard, like, especially, it's kind of relevant because obviously New Year's was pretty recently and everyone has their New Year's resolution to be a better person. And then I would say probably like 2 weeks into January, most people give up, and it's hard. And it just kind of goes to show, like, it's very hard to be a self-sustaining good person over time, because life does eventually, like, little things add up. You get in a bad mood and it's easier sometimes to do the wrong thing. But eventually, like, there is benefit to doing the right thing and being a good person. It's just you have to put a little bit more effort in.
Or in Jason's case, you just keep trying to win the dance competition with your group and you just never make it.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but he was both funky and fresh, so kudos to him.
Did you have anything else you want to add about season three?
I mean, I liked the accountant. And in season three, they also... Is that where they were also in the, it had to be, right? It had to be where they went to the, like, good place adjacent post office.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So I liked all that. I really liked their discovery of, like, what was wrong with the point system. I liked how it was like, okay, well, it seems to be obvious that it's the bad place manipulating points. And then it was this kind of side story about Tahani trying to be nice to Jason and Janet, that, like, she's like, ugh, there's all these unintended consequences that are backfiring on me. And that's when, you know, Michael has the realization. He's like, oh, right. All these unintended consequences of seemingly good decisions are making it so that no one gets in anymore. And I thought that was brilliant, because that could be, like, if you're assigning points, good and bad points, to any particular decision a person makes, as the world evolves, as humanity, you know, becomes a bigger society, like, your decisions have a much bigger ripple effect. And so,
more complex society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did I say?
Well, no, I'm just adding to that. Because, like, well, think about back in the primitive age where, like, you had your group of people in your tribe, you're in living in a cave or whatnot. And a good thing you could have done was just share this piece of buffalo you just caught.
Yeah, but you just killed a buffalo. That buffalo now can't go back to its family.
Yeah, but see, buffaloes don't seem to count in this thing because so.
I gave you a piece of something that I caught, and I'm trying to feed you my family. So wouldn't that count as a positive thing?
Right. So the example in the show was this guy, I think, got roses for his grandmother, and that turned out to be a net positive. But that's because the roses didn't belong to anyone, and roses are not counted as people, so it's not like you're killing people. And so no other humans were hurt by the act. And then his grandmother, you know, benefited from nice smelling roses. But then, you know, 500 years later, you know, you buy these roses, but the profits from the roses go to this, you know, evil billionaire, and that the, I don't know, credit card processing company uses sweatshop labor. I mean, it's incredibly complex, and like lots of people are hurt by the entire system. And so it's a net negative because of all the people that are part of that system. Whereas before, because people were not interconnected as much, simple acts, you know, didn't really affect anyone else.
That's an excellent way to put it, and I thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
So with that, I think we're good to go into season four, because at that point, the team had said, the system's corrupt, give us an opportunity to, you know, leave the point system as is, but show that given the opportunity, people can change in the afterlife and give themselves a net positive score once you take all of the complications that are on Earth out of it. And that brings us to season four.
Yeah.
So this one was your favorite season, right?
Yes, this was my favorite season. And if you guys don't mind, can I just delve into what the plot was?
Go for it.
So this season was, the team had kind of developed a purgatory type system where it's not quite the good place, not quite the bad place, but it's a simulated good place to show that people can give themselves net positive points and earn their right in the good place by spending some time in purgatory. And that's what we're just going to call it, because it's not the good place, but it's a fake good place. And so what they did was they said, okay, to test the system, people from the bad place will pick four subjects and you will have to show that they can change over time. And they picked Brent, who was kind of a arrogant businessman, Simone, which is Chidi's ex, she was a neurosurgeon, Linda, which we'll get into Linda in a second, and John, who was a celebrity blogger. So Linda was only there very shortly. Linda was a demon in disguise to try to throw off their test, but she was an old lady who was apprehensive to everything, just kind of bland as well. She's the Raisin Brand of cereals, if I had to describe something. And all in all, the demon kind of blew his cover, and they replaced Linda with Chidi because Chidi had to get his memory wiped, and it seemed like a perfect fit. So with that, it gave Eleanor quite a lot of development because she was in love with Chidi and she had to give something up for the greater good. Circling back to the trolley problem, it's so relevant in this whole show, I tell you. And so we gotten to see that development, and also it was a real showcasing of my favorite character in that season, Jeff. Jeff was the frog guy. He kind of held the key in and out of Earth from the afterlife to back into Earth. And in order to get his good side, you just had to give him some frog paraphernalia. And in the end of the show, he gets a real frog. That is the tearjerker moment for me. Mr. Jumpy Legs. Oh, it's so good. He built it up like he was going to name it after Michael, and he just goes and calls him Mr. Jumpy Legs. Oh, I love Jeff. I love Mr. Jumpy Legs, and I love season four. And the other thing is it kind of circled back into a real kind of plot again, whereas, like I said, season three for me felt like the buildup for it, and it wrapped everything up, put a nice bow on it, and in the end, you get this real tearjerker moment because everyone passes on to Beyond the Good Place, which is this kind of eternal resting where you're returned into the universe, which I like that season, but I didn't like that one part because they just kind of brought it up out of nowhere and it felt inorganic to me.
Wait, so you didn't like the idea of just your essence returning to the universe?
I love the idea of it. I don't love that they just kind of like said, oh, this is a thing now.
Mm.
It seemed like all of a sudden that was just there.
Well, so they also said that they weren't, well, okay. They did make it a little more concrete with the way that Eleanor, some of her consciousness kind of got into that one man and made him change his action to go take this piece of mail to Michael. But I think that at least for most of that episode, they were like, what happens when you walk through the door? And it's like, I don't know. Who knows? Can't know. It's unknowable. Which, you know, kind of harkens back to how we perceive death here on Earth. Like, what happens when you die? I don't know. It's kind of unknowable, right? Because you're dead.
I like the idea of it. I do understand what Tactic was saying because we watched together. So when they were laying out the new good place and the test system, they didn't really ever address the fact that they were adding in this portal. So when you were done, then you were just done. But I think it was kind of necessary. And they kind of hinted at it with the fact that the good place people that were drawn into, like, the judge and the trial of, like, what should happen with the new system were all very just complacent and seemed a little, like, robotic and, like, they didn't really have a purpose because now they just had an eternity to do whatever they wanted and they just didn't care. And I think having that out kind of, it gave the show an out and how to end it and wrap it up very nicely. But it also, like, obviously you'd get bored, right? Like, it showed Chidi, he read every book that he could possibly think of and he was bored. And so I think it tied everything up very nicely.
So that's why I liked it, but I didn't like that it just showed up all of a sudden.
I didn't feel like it was all of a sudden for me. I felt like they laid the groundwork pretty well for it with that female philosopher. I forget her name.
Hypatia.
Hypatia, played by Phoebe. She was like, your brain turns to mush. And so they're like, oh, well, we need to figure out why, you know, people's brains are turning to mush. And they go, oh, it's because, you know, you can do whatever you want forever. And Michael has this line where he's like, every person when they're living is a little sad because they know they're going to die, but it's that knowledge that makes what you're doing meaningful. And so the idea was, all right, if the knowledge of your non-existence at some point in the future is what makes what you're doing meaningful, then we have to give people a way to no longer exist. Right. And that's, you know, I feel like that's a pretty good logical progression for me, at least, as to how you get to this. Okay, well, we'll make a door that goes nowhere, or when you go through it, you become nothing. Or
so did you watch season 4 two times or more than once?
I watched those last few episodes at least twice.
I feel like I missed that, and I feel like a rewatch is necessary for me because that would solidify for sure season 4 being the perfect season.
Yeah, I think it was the second to last episode where that happened.
Yeah. Just Michael reminding everyone that all good things must come to an end, and then that's how you appreciate the good things in your life or afterlife.
And way to go, good place on doing that. Honestly, I'm going to go rewatch those episodes and I'm going to drop a line on the social meds.
Well,
thanking you guys for inspiring that.
Just be prepared to cry again because...
Get that tissue box.
It does not... The emotional impact does not lessen the second time around. I mean, I was watching it again like just a few hours ago and like... Even when Jason left, who was certainly not one of my favorite characters, when he's the first to go, I start getting all choked up. Like, no, why are you going? Like, I am so invested in these characters. I'm not thinking about like, oh, it's just an actor. They're out in the woods. I'm like, oh no, he's going to not exist anymore. Oh, speaking of that, whenever he left, I thought they were going to go a different route with him. So
I thought he wasn't going to be the first to go.
So I thought since he decided to be the first to go, I figured when Janet told him he could just sit there on the bench as long as he wanted, I figured he was going to take on a new role. He would just sit there on the bench and welcome people as they showed up to go through the door. And he would just sit there forever because that would seem interesting. But then, you know, he was gone and I was like, oh, I guess they're not going to do that.
But he ended up becoming a monk and not even realizing it.
Yeah, he did.
I thought that was amazing because that brought his character completely full circle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, he didn't relate to being a monk in the very beginning. Like, he found it very difficult to try to stay silent and try to act like he was a monk. And, I mean, he had his little, like, man cave where he had all of his video games and snacks and stuff because he just couldn't relate to it. And I do love that at the very end of the show, he finally got a chance to, like, just embody that inner peace and appreciation for the world around him without needing something like Madden.
Right.
Like, in the back of his mind, you know?
Absolutely. Yep.
I love Jason Mendoza.
And in fact, actually all of the characters, I think, had that sort of full circle sort of thing where, like, Eleanor didn't care about anyone. And in the end, the way that she kind of finds her peace is by making sure that, like, the last few people that are not covered by the system actually, like, get to find their peace by, you know, bringing Mindy St. Clair to, you know, have her own test and then getting Michael turned into a human. And, you know, Tahani ends up becoming, you know, master of everything because...
And...
Go ahead.
And objectifying Eleanor. It was nice to see that happen the other way.
Yeah.
Just that... That whole season, it wrapped up really, really well.
Well, even like Chidi, he finally made a concrete decision.
Right.
And like, obviously, when he gets all of his memories back in season 4, he is this cool, calm, collected version of himself who's super confident. But to be able to make that final decision and not doubt himself, like, he knew. And that it just shows how well they wrapped up all of these characters. And even with Michael being able to be human and get that final chance to embrace humanity like I think he wanted the entire show. I mean, this was one of probably the best finales and send-offs that I've seen in a while.
I completely agree. And on the note of Chidi, like, he that's the decision he makes is essentially the ultimate decision, like, to exist or to no longer exist, right? So that's really huge. There's so much into that decision, and he's, you know, he's ready to go, like, yep, I'm done. I've seen enough. I've gotten enough of what he wanted. And I think it's because he realized, and he makes this statement in the final episode. He's like, all we really need is time. It's not all of this stuff. We just need the time that we want with our loved ones. And once we've had enough time, you know, we'll be okay. It'll be fine to move on.
So I have a question I just thought of just now. Imagine you're in the afterlife for all of eternity, and you actually do have this option of walking through that door and for your essence to go back into the universe. Could you ever see yourself walking through that door?
I feel like it's one of those things where now, because we don't have that unlimited time, it's hard to imagine wanting to do so. But I feel like, especially watching these characters and literally the idea of time being limitless, like, I can't even really comprehend that. But I feel like eventually at some point, you probably would get to that point, because if you have all of the time in the world, eventually you would master everything you wanted to do. You would see everything. You and your loved ones would have enough time. So maybe at some point, but right now I just cannot even visualize having enough time to do everything I want.
Yeah, that's the biggest key with what the way the show did it is that not only did they show like Tahani mastering all these things, but time on Earth was going on as well. And so inevitably, each and every one of their family members passed on and they got to be reunited with them. So there would it would just be you'd have everyone that you need. You have all the time to do everything. So I definitely don't see why I would hold back. Because at that point, everything's been done. All boxes have been checked.
So I'm going to go a little bit different route here. I don't think I would. And the reason is because I'm so concerned about how the future will unfold. And the future will be constantly unfolding. And there will be constantly like new people coming in that I feel like there would be enough new experiences like all the time. That I would probably find myself contented by like continuing on forever.
So would you try to be an architect then?
I would at some point probably try to be an architect, and I'd probably get bored of that at some point. Like I absolutely understand that I would get bored of things. That's for sure. I think that I would end up, I don't know, probably becoming some sort of human history like cataloger. Like I would
like a historian.
Yeah, I would want to know like how is humanity progressing now, like what are they doing, how's it going on out, like what's going on out there, because there will be new things and new technologies and all sorts of stuff constantly, you know, happening out, you know, in the I don't know, the mortal realm. So
that's a really good point that I did not think of. Because like you master all of these hobbies and then there's just new ones that could possibly pop up all the time.
Right. And so I feel like there would always be something new. But I mean, at some point, I suppose like once humanity dies out or something, and then there's no new things, then yeah, probably I'd go. But that'd be, you know,
the door would be closed, though, because your essence couldn't return to the rest of humanity.
There you go. So I'd be stuck there. My brain would turn to mush, and I'd end up drinking milkshakes.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Honestly, doesn't sound that bad, though.
That's the bad place. An eternity of drinking milkshakes. And side note, you're lactose intolerant now.
No!
That is me, actually.
I love milk too much.
Yeah.
I couldn't, that would be my bad place. Like, oh, suddenly, Isaac, you're lactose intolerant. No!
I would never walk through that door. Uh-oh. I don't care if I get bored. I will find something to do. But that's mostly just me, because I'm a really, like, productive person, I suppose you can call me that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Sorry. Oh, no, you're fine. Is that a wrap-up? Is this all we gotta say? Because I just thought of something else, and I know we're almost out of time, but we forgot to address the medium place!
Oh, yeah, that's right.
With Mindy St. Clair and Derek?
See, I thought they were gonna fold the medium place into the purgatory, where it'd just be everything kind of meh, and then that's what would be where they prove themselves, but it was just a weird sexual house.
I feel like the medium place to me was the only thing that kind of had me a little confused, because I compared Mindy St. Clair to Tahani in the way that they were both like very self-absorbed, but they both like the only reason that Mindy St. Clair ended up in the middle or the medium place was because her namesake organization ended up raising a bunch of money for charity and helping a bunch of people. But arguably, Tahani would have been the same. So that was my only, like, loophole, plot hole thing in the entire show.
That's a good point.
I was kind of wondering why Tahani wouldn't have ended up in a medium place like Mindy St. Clair.
I think, and this is just me going out on a limb here, but I think it's because Tahani died several decades later and her
Her motives were different.
Yeah.
Probably the branching out. I mean, now that we have technology and everything is so like globally interconnected, like we were saying before. Yeah, that's a good point. Like 20 years ago, I feel like it would have been a little bit simpler to figure out the point system for Mindy St. Clair.
Yeah, 30 years ago or 40 years ago, like it wouldn't have been so easy to buy something made in a sweatshop necessarily. So
also, can we just note that I kind of like put in my head that Mindy St. Clair was in the 80s and I was like, oh, that's 20 years ago. But oh, no, that's 40 years ago now.
I knew what you meant when you said 20 years ago, because I was like, yeah, that's my mentality. The 80s is 20 years ago. But that is not true.
Where is time going?
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
I mean,
ridiculous.
The 2010s really did just fly by. So I swear.
You kind of dated yourself when you said that. You liked The Lion King in our spoiler-free episode. I was like, oh, that means you're like maybe 2-3 years younger than me. And that's about it. Because I really like Aladdin. And then, so people that are just slightly...
That's my favorite Disney movie, yeah, for the record.
Yeah. And so people that are just slightly younger than me will, you know, like The Lion King instead, because that was their movie.
Alrighty, well, this has been a fantastic conversation, guys. Thank you so much, Nerd Bomber and Tectic, for taking the time to do this. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you guys for having us on. This is a great time. We appreciate, like you said, having this conversation with you. It's a great thing to talk about shows that you've binged. I feel like this is like the last 2 or 3 weeks of our lives was watching The Good Place, and just getting a chance to unpack it was incredible. Well, I guess we'll just give our little like sign off. Again, I'm Nerd Bomber.
And I'm Tectic.
We're from the Online Warriors podcast. And you can find us at Online Warriors 1 on Twitter for our podcast, and at OW Nerd Bomber and at OW Tectic if you want to get in touch with us personally.
Take it sleazy. Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast. Learn more about us on Twitter at BingeablesPod.
If you enjoyed this episode, head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We would very much appreciate it.
Until next time. The Bingeables Podcast is produced by patron Raymond G. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin McLeod.